Good evening, and welcome to everyone who's joining us on the internet. Freedom is the only gift you can offer to God's sons. Well, what is freedom? Simple answer, freedom is the experience of not being bound. But it's difficult to gain your freedom if you don't know what's binding you. Especially if what's binding you is something that you have called the practice of freedom. If your practice of freedom is what has bound you, you're not likely to discover that fact on your own. Because your motive and application of your will in your life, you're now discovering is keeping you in the dark. Last week we discussed the fact that there's a difference between free will and self-will, and that what you all have been calling free will, and which you have designated as an innate right that each of you has, and therefore a divine right that you have, we've uncovered the fact that that is not free will, but is self-will. And that self-will is always acted out as a means of self-defense, of self-protection. Its practice is predicated upon the idea, the single mad idea, that you exist independently on your own, and your independence is your birthright. And yet, for months now, we've been discussing the fact that this independence is not only a flawed idea, it is false. It simply isn't true. If you are going to give freedom to your brother, you're going to have experienced it yourself. It's that simple. In order to experience freedom, you're going to have to abandon that which is binding you. And what has become abundantly and perfectly clear is the fact that your practice of free will has been a practice of self-will. And this is what has bound you, and this is what you're going to have to abandon. So, how are you going to abandon it? Well, I gave you two prayers some time back. These are very helpful in abandoning the practice of self-will. The first prayer was, I wish to see the evidence of love. That desire, expressed, embraced by you, and not resisted, constitutes a willingness to see something other than what you're generally seeing. Because as you look around, you do not seem to see the evidence of love. You say it's because it isn't there. But I'm telling you, you aren't seeing it because you're not wishing to see it. You're in a state of self-defense all the time. You're protecting yourself against failure of all sorts. Plus, you're protecting yourself against a world that you believe is basically hostile, and brothers and sisters who are basically hostile, unlike you. When you see someone who is ill, you believe it's true. And then you take steps to defend yourself against their illness. And if you are of a spiritual bent, you will even help them with, quote, the truth, defend themselves against this real illness. That's part of the human condition. And so now both of you are engaged in defense against an enemy. If you're still engaged in defense, you're engaged in self-will, and you're not experiencing your freedom. And so you reinforce, quote, the human condition. You reinforce the illness. You reinforce for yourself this hostile world. You have to find a way to step outside of that deeply ingrained habitual practice of claiming your independence from your brothers and from your world and from God. And you have to wish to see something new. You have to wish to see something real. You have to wish to see something that at the moment your eyes aren't seeing. You have to wish to see healing. I wish to see the evidence of love. I wish to see beyond what my conditioned thinking is allowing me to see. I wish to see that which is there, which is greater than what my conditioned responses cause me to see. And even what my brother or sister is presenting to me in their own ignorance. And the second prayer, I wish to be the evidence of love. I wish my actions to express love, not fear. I wish for my behavior to embody love, not fear. I wish to be the place where the truth flows out through me and illuminates truth out there as healing, as regeneration, as redemption. Now, we also found out last week that you can't do this alone, because your conditioning does not allow for the greater perspective that is where truth lies. And that's why I'm here. And that's why every single brother and sister of the Brotherhood stands with you, because they are awake. They know the truth. And what do they know the truth about? That's most significant. They know the truth about you. I know the truth about you. And so we stand in a position of remembering for you what you have forgotten and which you have become determined to not experience. You say, why? I don't have a determination not to experience it. But I'm telling you that as long as you are acting out from fear in a defensive manner through the use of self-will, you are expressing determination not to remember, because in that state you cannot be conscious of the truth about you. You cannot remember it, because it is an active practice of denial of what you are. You haven't known this, but now I'm telling you. And this is the way I help you remember. Now, your task is to extend this same thing to your brothers and sisters, even if they are presenting to you manifestations of illness, manifestations of distress that come out in the form of hate and jealousy and all of the forms that seem hurtful. Someone needs to remember for your brother, just as someone needs to remember for you. So how do you gain your freedom? You gain it by remembering who you are. And who you are is the son or daughter of your father. You're not an orphan. You're not independent. You've got to become humble enough to say you're willing to abandon your insistence that you're an independent agent, and that is a God-given thing, that it's your responsibility and right to express as fully as possible. You've got to become humble enough, because of the arrogance of the belief of independence, to say, help. To let your father in so that you might remember your identity. I wish to see the evidence of love instead of what I'm conditioned to see. And I wish to be the evidence of love instead of the evidence of self-will. And then you don't sit there and strain with all of your might to see the evidence of love all by yourself. You say, Father, you say, Holy Spirit, you ask your guide to help you see the truth that you know must be there. You let the influx of the clarity come because your desire to see the evidence of love is as pure as you're able to let it be at the moment, and your commitment is greater to seeing more of the truth that's there than it is to your conditioned perceptions. I cannot express it strongly enough that every single day and in every single moment, only the kingdom of heaven confronts you, and only the brotherhood confronts you. And so no matter how the brotherhood is presenting themselves to you, those that are in your experience, there is more there. And if they are presenting themselves to you in a way that is offensive, because they mean to be offensive, because they're in a state of fear and need to protect themselves, you have to be willing to stand there and remember that in spite of what they're presenting, which can't be the truth about them, there is what they really are, present right there. And you ask to help. Remember, you ask for help to remember what is the truth about them. So that you might be the place where the truth about them makes entrance into their experience. Freedom is the only gift you can offer to God's sons, being an acknowledgement of what they are and what He is. There's the fatherhood acknowledged that causes the experience of identity to return to you or to your brother. Freedom is creation because it is love. What you seek to imprison, you do not love. Boy, she really looks bad today. She shouldn't be out here spreading her germs. He shouldn't be out here spreading his germs. He ought to be, she ought to be, home, confined to her room, confined to her bed. Imprisoned. Wow, he's really being obtuse today. Wow, she's really being down and dirty mean. Shame on him, shame on her. Exclude them. Exclude him, exclude her. What you seek to imprison, you do not love. You see the difference? Healing is not going to arise. Correction is not going to occur if you believe what you are perceiving on the basis of your thinking you're independent and vulnerable and in need of always practicing self-defense. I promise you, if you don't dare to embrace what your perceptions tell you is your enemy, you will not be in a position to have revealed to you the true nature of what you're willing to embrace. I wish to see the evidence of love. I do not wish to reinforce my perceptions of something that is the opposite of love and convict that one by my convictions as to their unworthiness. I wish to see the evidence of love. I wish to give a willingness to acknowledge the Christ right there where that one is behaving so horribly. I wish to feel the truth of their Christhood so that I might be entirely undefended in his or her presence and reflect to them my remembering of what they truly are, not of the history they have provided to me over months and months as to their guilt, and that they really are obtuse and offensive, threatening, and therefore an enemy. What you seek to imprison, you do not love. Therefore, when you seek to imprison anyone, in other words, when you seek to hold them to their history, therefore, when you seek to imprison anyone, including yourself, you do not love him, and you cannot identify with him. The isolation is reinforced. The difference is reinforced. And you are practicing and embodying polarization. When you imprison yourself, you are losing sight of your true identification with me and with the Father. Well, what does that mean? In practical terms, it means that you are losing sight of your true identification with your guide or with the Holy Spirit, that which is your right mind, and with the Father, and reconfirming your lack of identity, your orphanhood. Your identification is with the Father and with the Son. It cannot be with one and not the other. If you are part of one, you must be part of the other, because they are one. You see, if you say, okay, Father, I'll let you back in, and I will acknowledge you as my Father, so that I might experience my true identity. You can't say that and then say, but these bitches and bastards around me, I don't want to acknowledge them as my brothers and sisters. Well, if you're not willing to do that, you're not willing to accept the fatherhood of God, that means that you have sisters and brothers, that you are part of a wholeness, part of a wholeness, something which fits in with a wholeness, an infinite expression of God that constitutes the infiniteness of you. You see, unfortunately, you can't have a private relationship with God. The minute you have a real one with Him, you have a real one with everyone and everything. That's the prize. That's what you stand in receipt of, finding yourself not separated in any way from anyone or anything. And in your willingness to stand in brotherhood, fitting in with everything, you truly experience your divinity and the divinity of everything. And the singularity of infinity becomes your conscious experience, and you're awake. But I'll tell you something, you've got to start today pushing against your mindsets, your habitual thinking, your well-established perceptions. You've got to be willing to abandon your relying upon your memory of your world and your memory of your brothers and sisters and the habit you have of holding it all to your memory of it and not being available in the moment of conscious awareness of them to the experience of what they truly are as creation continues to be the movement of, quote, "Behold, I make all things new," unquote. God does not repeat Himself. Therefore, whoever is confronting you, or whatever is confronting you at this moment, is not out of the past. And in its presence, in its present, it is glorious. It is an experience of glory. The Holy Trinity is holy because it is one. If you exclude yourself from this union, you are perceiving the Holy Trinity as separated. You must be included in it because it is everything. It is that which nothing is excluded from. Unless, oh boy, and the ego does not like this. Unless you take your place in it and fulfill your function as part of it, it is as bereft of you, it is as bereft as you are. Why doesn't the ego like that? Because it loves its imagined autonomy, and it loves the hit it expects to get from verifying its independent capacity to authorize things. Fit in? Not be the kingpin? Be equal with all of my brothers and sisters? Love them unconditionally? Give them the benefit of the doubt from a clarity that's available to me about what's divinely true about them when they have been behaving so badly, or when I made such a fool of myself in front of them, Yes. Unless you take your place in it and fulfill your function as part of it, it is as bereft as you are. Now, you must understand that although you have to acknowledge that you're just part of the whole, a part that must fit in, and unless you yield to that, you won't abandon the practice of independence. And you won't, your mind will not be present to experience the singularity of creation, in which all of creation is you. And you do not experience being a part of it. But you will not get to the place of experiencing your integral connection with the whole until you're first willing to recognize and accept the fact that you're a part of it, and that it's your function to fit in. It's not your function to be different from it all. That is not what your birthright is, and that is not what free will is all about. Free will isn't a capacity you have to stand up and be different from everything else. Free will, as we talked about last week, is the will that doesn't bind you or anything else. It is the Father's will to be. It is therefore the will to be that is at the very center of you. Not the will to be something, but the will to be. To be. And you might say, letting the chips fall where they may. It's not a will to be with control. It's a will to be conscious of whatever there is to be conscious of. God bees as mind. Mind cannot be mind without being conscious, without being conscious of something. And the only thing there is for it to be conscious of is the movement of its will to be. And so, mind, God, discovers at every moment anew what it is. And the wholeness of it is captured by the words, and God saw, or I'm going to say, and God sees everything that he is being. God, mind, sees the movement of mind and recognizes itself in it. And you know what? God, mind, stays with that experience without attempting to apply controls to it. Oh, I want that thing over there that's exquisite to be a little bit different. Oh, I want to look at it through lenses that distort it a little bit. God and you, when you're not practicing self-will, allow God and you, allow for creation, the movement of being, to occur, and notice it, acknowledge it, and recognize yourself in. And never does any act of coercion come into play. Again, referring to the Holy Trinity, unless you take your place in it and fulfill your function as part of it, it is as bereft as you are. No part of it can be imprisoned. If its truth is to be known, if its truth is to be known, rather than your preference, can you be separated from your identification and be at peace? Can you forget your identity? Seem to become an orphan and be at peace? Well, are you at peace? Is life a dream? Is life wonderful? Is life full of uninterrupted bliss and harmony? No, your experience of life right now answers that question. Can you be separated from your identification and be at peace? Dissociation, divorcement, is not a solution. It is what? A delusion. It's not even real. It's a it's like a universal misperception. It isn't that it's actually universal, but it is that the only thing you have to be conscious of is the universal, and you're having a misperception of the universal. The delusional, those who insist upon the right to practice free will, which really means self-will, the delusional believe that truth will assail them. And so they do not see it because they prefer the delusion. Well, why would you think that truth would assail you? Well, if truth is going to reveal to you that your definitions that you've given everything are not true, that will seem to call the integrity of you, the authorizer of those definitions, into question. That's an attack. It's seen as a means of undermining your capacity to be an independent authorizer. And of course it is. But it's not attack. It's the truth, bringing the truth to your conscious awareness so that you might become free of a delusion. So that you might become free of a bondage that it's not appropriate for you to be experiencing. And you know what? The truth that's being revealed to you now is incredible, because it is saying with utter clarity to you that what you have called the practice of free will is what binds you, because in actuality it's a practice of self-will. And this practice of self-will is nothing more than a practice of self-defense. Which reinforces your delusion that you are independent and separate. And absolutely blinds you to the place you hold in the wholeness of creation, in which no part of the wholeness of creation is unavailable to you. And therefore, in which you can experience the singularity of creation and find yourself at one with it all, and it all at one with you, causing you to experience selfhood as infinite. And because it's infinite, it's incapable of standing apart from anything, because there's no outside to infinity for you to stand up and be tall in, or bigger than infinity. The delusional believe that truth will assail them, and so they do not see it because they prefer the delusion. Judging truth as something they do not want, they perceive deception and block knowledge. And where do they perceive deception? Right where truth is present. Where do you guys see deception? You see it in each other. You look at each other and you believe that all of you are deceptive to one degree or another with each other, and therefore you've got to be on guard. They look at truth. They look at God. They look at me. They look at their guide. And they perceive either deception or potential deception. You see, God is going to nail me. God says he's love, but he's going to nail me. You see deception there. You look at truth, which says, there's a different way to be that is more fulfilling. But in order to experience it, you're going to have to be willing to abandon the right you think you have to authorize things, to be the authorizer of things. You're going to have to abandon the acts of independent authority that you have come to believe give you credibility and respectability and success. And you see that as deceptive. And here is where you love to bring out the biblical statement that if the spirits speak to you, test them. Test them. Because you don't know whether they're evil spirits or really spirit with a capital S. And so you justify not taking the risk of exploring what truth reveals to you, because you are afraid that truth is deceptive. Judging truth as something they do not want, they perceive deception and what? Block knowledge. Knowledge means knowing with a capital K. It means the divine awareness of what really is. You block it. You simply block it. That's the result. Help them, your brothers and sisters, by offering them your unified will on their behalf. Be willing to remember for them. Help them by offering them your unified will on their behalf, as I am offering you mine on yours. And as has been brought out, whatever you give becomes yours. Alone, we can do nothing. But together, our wills fuse into something whose power is far beyond the power of its separate parts. By not being separate, the will is invincible because it is. I'm sorry. By not being separate, the will of God is established in ours and as ours. And that's where self-will goes out of the picture. And that's what the ego screams loudly to you to ignore, because it knows it's the end of it. By not being separate, the will of God is established in ours and as ours. This will is invincible because it is undivided. The undivided will of the Sonship is the perfect Creator, being wholly in the likeness of God, whose will it is. You are also afraid of disappearing into the mix. If you yield, if you abandon your right to private self-existence, self-authorized self-existence, and what you don't realize is that your insistence upon your self-authorized self-existence is bondage. The undivided will of the Sonship is the perfect Creator, being wholly in the likeness of God, whose will it is. You cannot be exempt from it if you are to understand what it is and what you are. By separating your will from mine, you are exempting yourself from the will of God, which is yourself. Now, the human condition that you seem to be experiencing is a result of already having done that. And so we could say, instead of saying by separating your will from mine, we could say by not joining your will with mine, now that you know better, now that you know that is possible, you are exempting yourself from the will of God, which is yourself. So now you know that you have an option to the human condition. Now you know you have an option to what you've called free will, which now you know is really self-will, and which is the means by which you bind yourself to isolation. You know you have an option now. And intellectually you can grasp the wisdom of taking that option. But until you do it, you will be exempting yourself from the will of God, which is yourself. You will be exempting yourself from the conscious experience of what you really are, and you will be exempting yourself from remembering who you are. And until you remember who you are, even a little bit, even a glimpse, you won't be in a position of extending freedom to your brother. I know it seems like there are so many things for you to re-see, to look at and see again with new eyes. There are so many things that seem unlovely. There are so many whom you feel are not worthy of your love, quote, because of what they did, unquote, in the past. There are so many things to see anew, to re-see, that it's overwhelming and you couldn't possibly accomplish it. That is an illusion. All you have to do is begin to break the habit of misperceiving. Just begin to break the habit by doing something new with this little one and this little thing and that little thing. And see the transformation and the renewal. Just begin with the little things. But remember, the goal is, I wish to see the evidence of love, not the evidence of hate, not the evidence of fear. And I wish to be the evidence of love, not the evidence of frustration, not the evidence of fear, not the evidence of hate. Why? Because I wish to see the evidence of love here, meaning I wish to see healing here. I wish to see transformation in my world. I wish to see redemption. Mine, my brothers, the world's. You really do want to see something different from what you're experiencing right now. You want to experience it in a way that's different from the way you're experiencing it right now. You really do. So it's not hard if you don't forget that you really do want to see things differently. It's not hard to begin to take the small steps. I wish to see the evidence of love. I wish to be the evidence of love. Say those prayers and mean them. And remember, that meaning them means that you will not continue to have the right to hold your brother to his past or to hold your brother to your memories of the past. You will lose the freedom to be reactive to your misperceptions, whether they're relative to you or to your brother, because you want to see the evidence of love. And you want to be the evidence of love, because you want to remember who you are. And I and each of your guides are here to help you remember. So refer to us when you're confronted by this opportunity or that opportunity or the other opportunity to see in a new way. Okay. I love you all. Why? Because I know who you really are. And it's not who you think you really are. I look forward to being with you next week.